Stage 6. Subduing Subtle Distractions. 6. The goal of Stage 6 is to subdue subtle distractions and develop metacognitive introspective awareness. Set and hold the intention to establish a clearly defined scope of attention and completely ignore subtle distractions. These intentions will mature into the highly developed skills of stable attention and mindfulness, and you will achieve both exclusive, single-pointed attention and metacognitive introspective awareness. Practice goals for Stage 6. You begin this stage with a more energized mind, so objects of attention are clear and vivid. Peripheral awareness is also brighter and more open. Just as turning up the light in a dark room illuminates objects in the shadows, your heightened conscious power reveals thoughts and sensations previously too subtle to detect. It may even seem like there are more subtle distractions than before, but you've just become more aware of the ones that were already present and scattering your attention. Your primary goal for this stage is to subdue subtle distractions, particularly those produced by the discriminating mind. The first step is to achieve exclusive attention, also called single-pointed attention. When you can focus exclusively on the meditation object, despite competing stimuli, attention no longer alternates to subtle distractions. Next, you must sustain exclusive attention long enough that mental objects start to fade from awareness. Then you'll have subdued subtle distractions. Make no mistake, while exclusive attention is a valuable skill, it's only a means to subduing subtle distractions, not an end in itself. Also, subtle distractions are only temporarily subdued. They will return if you stop exerting effort to ignore them. You won't overcome distractions completely until Stage 7. Your second goal, which you'll work on at the same time, is to develop metacognitive introspective awareness, an awareness of the mind itself. You accomplish this by holding a clear intention to continuously observe the state and activities of your mind while still maintaining exclusive attention. You have mastered Stage 6 when attention rarely alternates with bodily sensations and ambient sounds. Thoughts are at most infrequent and fleeting, and metacognitive awareness is continuous. When you can sustain exclusive attention together with powerful mindfulness for long periods, you have reached the second major milestone and are a skilled meditator. Developing and sustaining exclusive attention to subdue subtle distractions. Developing exclusive focus means ignoring subtle distractions. Subtle distractions are like children who keep trying to get the attention of a parent occupied with an important activity. If you ignore them consistently enough, they get tired of trying and don't interrupt as often. Yet if you stop ignoring them, even for a moment, they'll be back, clamoring for attention again. In the same way, you subdue subtle distractions by not giving them the energy of your attention. The energy of attention. Whenever you give a thought any attention, even subtly, that gives it energy to continue and potentially stir up related thoughts. If you ignore the thought and focus on something else, it fades and disappears. The next time you meditate, make a point of observing this for yourself. The quality of exclusive focus depends as much on stabilizing the scope of attention as it does on fixating on an object. Otherwise, even if your attention remains fixed, your scope will spontaneously expand to include other things, especially thoughts. Therefore, you must first clearly define and stabilize your scope of attention. Then, you completely ignore everything outside that scope. At the same time, remember to exclude nothing from peripheral awareness. Both awareness and attention are working together in developing exclusive attention. Awareness keeps a watchful lookout for potential distractions. When detected, attention responds by tightening up the focus and ignoring the potential distraction. Consistently sustained exclusive attention leads to a dramatic decrease in the number and frequency of mental objects projected into consciousness by the thinking, emotional mind. Eventually, they fade from consciousness so completely that they rarely appear even in peripheral awareness, meaning subtle distractions have been subdued. This process, called pacifying the mind, begins in this stage and continues through stage 7. Conscious intention. Conscious intention is the key to developing exclusive attention. Simply hold the intention to observe all the fine details of the meditation object. At the same time, hold the intention to ignore everything else. That's it. Of course, many conflicting intentions lie beneath the surface that complicate such a simple formula. Therefore, let's examine the whole process more closely. As you know, the presence of a subtle distraction means attention is rapidly alternating between the breath and the distraction. These spontaneous movements of attention occur because unconscious sub-minds keep projecting different objects into consciousness, each with an intention to become an object of attention. Say you're focusing on the breath when a new object suddenly appears in peripheral awareness. Maybe it's a feeling of annoyance at the sound of a barking dog. That sound arrives with a strong intention for it to become your new object of attention, as does the annoyance it elicits. These new intentions conflict with your current intention to follow the breath. What you're actually experiencing is a series of moments of attention, some with the breath as their object, others with the feeling of annoyance. Each moment arrives with an intention for its object to become the object of future moments of attention. Whichever object is associated with the stronger intention receives more attention, and so long as it's the breath, your attention seems stable while the reaction to the noise just stands out as a subtle distraction. But depending on which of the two intentions subsequently receives more support and energy from the mind system as a whole, either could end up receiving most or all of your attention. Anytime you intentionally choose to focus your attention more firmly on the breath and ignore a distraction, you shift this balance. Remember, any action arising from conscious intention results from an agreement among several sub-minds rather than the intention of just one, so it's always stronger and more effective. Fewer moments of attention go to the distraction, so the distraction and the intention behind it fade away. Mind models, intention, and exclusive attention. In terms of the moments of consciousness model, the intention to have exclusive attention increases the number of perceiving moments focused on the meditation object until they are as many as possible. It also decreases the number of perceiving moments focused on distractions until there are as few as possible. In terms of the mind system model, the practice of exclusive attention is an exercise of executive function that gradually trains your unconscious sub-minds to stop projecting distractions into consciousness. To summarize, individual sub-minds in the unconscious project potential distractions into peripheral awareness. Each of these potential distractions arrives with the intention to become a new object of attention. These unconscious, bottom-up intentions come into conflict with our conscious, top-down intention to observe the meditation object. How the conflict goes depends on which intention is stronger. That's why it's so important to hold the intention to observe the breath in ever greater detail, and to ignore distractions completely, while at the same time making sure to sustain peripheral awareness. These intentions create an even stronger consensus of sub-minds, making attention more stable. Put another way, the more fully conscious our intentions, the more completely the conflict will be resolved in favor of focusing on the breath. Experiencing the whole body with the breath, a method for developing exclusive attention. It's possible to achieve exclusive attention by just focusing over and over on the breath at the nose and ignoring subtle distractions until they fade away. But that can take a very long time. Experiencing the whole body with the breath is a faster and more enjoyable method that makes it much easier to completely ignore distractions. This practice involves clearly defining, then gradually expanding, the scope of your intention until it includes sensations related to the breath throughout the entire body all at once. The method itself builds on the body scanning practice you learned in Stage 5. Just as with the body scan, you first direct your attention to the breath at the abdomen. Then, making sure that peripheral awareness of the breath at the abdomen doesn't fade, you shift your attention to a particular body part, such as your hand. Define your scope of attention to include that area only. Then further refine your scope to include only the breath sensations in the hand. Ignore all other sensations by excluding them completely from attention, but let them remain in peripheral awareness. Next, move to another body part, perhaps the forearm, and do the same thing. Each moment of attention should include a very strong intention to focus clearly on breath-related sensations and to exclude everything else. As your skill improves, keep increasing the scope of your attention to include larger and larger areas. Also, keep shifting between larger and smaller areas. For example, you might move between one finger and the entire arm. Your intention should be to observe all breath-related sensations as clearly in the whole arm as in that one finger. Whether you succeed or not isn't important, though eventually you will succeed. What matters is that simply holding this intention will bring your maximum available conscious capacity to bear on the current task. The differences between this practice and everything you've done before are small but crucial. First, you define your scope of attention much more precisely. Second, you focus exclusively on breath-related sensations. You used to tolerate the presence of subtle distractions, letting them come, letting them be, and letting them go. In fact, you were warned not to try to keep attention from alternating with these objects. Now, it's just the opposite. You aim to ignore thoughts and non-breath-related sensations so completely that attention never alternates with them. They remain only in peripheral awareness. Finally, you will keep expanding your scope of attention until it includes the entire body. In the words of the Buddha, experience the whole body with the breath. Experiencing the whole body while breathing in, he trains himself. Experiencing the whole body while breathing out, he trains himself. Anapanasati Sutta. When you can clearly observe all the breath sensations occurring in the body at once, you are so fully engaged that there's no attention to spare for distractions. As long as you ignore everything but the expanded meditation object, subtle distractions are temporarily subdued. Your sensory sub-minds keep projecting non-breath-related sensations into consciousness, but they appear only in peripheral awareness. However, mental objects are much less evident, even in awareness. Your discriminating sub-minds may keep knocking on the door of consciousness with their various thoughts, but they can't get a word in edgewise. After a while, they just quit trying. Yet they do keep generating thoughts at an unconscious level, which is why distractions can still arise if you don't stay vigilant. After a while, shift your focus back to the breath of the nose. You may find it easier to make the transition by adding a middle step, shifting your attention first to the abdomen. However, once you've returned to the nose, you'll experience a period of exclusive attention to this much smaller object. Very few mental objects will even make it into peripheral awareness. When exclusive focus starts to fade, repeat the entire exercise of experiencing the whole body with the breath. There's no reason to go part by part through the entire body each time, unless it's helpful. Once you've learned to recognize breath-related sensations everywhere, you can return immediately to the whole body, or first to the abdomen, then to the whole body. With practice, you'll be able to sustain exclusive focus on the breath at the nose for longer and longer. Such stable attention characterizes the concentration of an adept meditator. So how does this practice work? When we sit somewhere quiet and close our eyes to meditate, sights, sounds, smells, and tastes are reduced to a minimum. However, lots of bodily sensations and thoughts are still projected into consciousness by unconscious sub-minds. These two kinds of objects dominate peripheral awareness and are the major source of subtle distractions, competing with the breath and each other for your attention. Mental objects produced by the discriminating mind are the more intrusive of these two types of distractions, so it makes sense to deal with them first. You do that in this practice by emphasizing bodily sensations. Specifically, this practice helps develop exclusive attention because it takes advantage of the way bodily sensations compete with mental objects for attention. When we expand our scope of attention to include the entire body, that's a huge amount of somatosensory information to take in. With all those bodily sensations filling consciousness, there's simply no attention left over for distracting mental objects. In other words, you create exclusive, single-pointed attention by not shrinking your attention down to a small point, but by expanding it so there's no room for distracting thoughts and other mental objects. Also, by intentionally focusing exclusively on breath-related sensations, you keep other kinds of sensations, including non-breath-related bodily sensations, from becoming subtle distractions. At the same time, the mind grows accustomed to sustaining an exclusive focus of attention. Pacifying the mind. As you develop exclusive attention and can sustain it for longer and longer periods of time, you begin to pacify the mind. Two interrelated processes are involved in this pacification process. First, intentionally ignoring mental objects trains the mind system as a whole to ignore them automatically whenever they appear in consciousness. Second, when they've been consistently ignored, and for long enough, the thinking, emotional mind no longer presents these potential distractions as continuously or vigorously. Thought processes do continue at an unconscious level, but when they consistently fail to become objects of attention, even as subtle distractions, they eventually stop appearing in consciousness altogether. The thinking, emotional mind simply stops projecting its content into consciousness. At this stage, you need constant vigilance and effort to keep the mind pacified. This is because the thinking, emotional subminds are continuously active at an unconscious level, even in deep sleep. Therefore, as soon as the intention to focus exclusively on the meditation object weakens, distractions return. The pacification process reaches completion in the course of stage 7. Then you will be one giant step closer to unification of mind. A change in perception of the meditation object. As the mind grows pacified, thoughts and other conceptual objects generated by the discriminating mind start to disappear from consciousness. So does the conceptual veneer that overlays everything we perceive. Conscious experience becomes progressively more non-conceptual and non-discursive. For the first time, we experience the breath more directly as a series of sense percepts arising and passing away. When we start meditating, our experience of the breath is mostly conceptual, although we don't know it at the time. In fact, during the early stages, we are hardly aware of the actual breath sensations, just enough to trigger the arising of concepts related to the breath. These concepts, inhaling, pause, exhaling, are our real objects of attention. The conceptualizing begins as we breathe in, when air first strikes the skin at the nostrils. The somatosensory mind projects a small number of mind moments into consciousness that have these breath-related sense percepts as their object. The discriminating mind immediately assimilates those sense percepts and interprets them using concepts it already has, like nose, touch, air, beginning, and in-breath. When this purely conceptual view of what's happening is projected into consciousness, we subjectively perceive the beginning of the in-breath, hardly noticing the actual sensations. The same thing happens again when a few more moments of attention provide another sample of sense percepts produced by air flowing over the skin of the nostrils. The discriminating mind generates another conceptual construct, such as the first part of the middle of the in-breath. In other words, as we engaged with the breath, we were following concepts more than actual sensations. The very idea of the breath is really a complex concept built from many other concepts, that we are a separate being, that we have a body, that we have a nose that's part of our body. Our body is surrounded by air. Air moves through the nose in two directions, and so on. It's not until we start observing the subtle details, the sensations that repeat themselves with every in and out breath, that we actually begin experiencing sense percepts directly. What is true of the breath is also true throughout our lives. Our everyday experience isn't one of sensations so much as of mental constructs built on top of those sensations. The simplest mental constructs are the sense percepts themselves. These, in turn, are used to build increasingly complex conceptual formations. This process has been unfolding since you were born. Your mind has accumulated a huge mass of increasingly elaborate conceptual formations in an attempt to organize and simplify the enormous variety of sensory experiences you've been exposed to. Like in the movie The Matrix, we inhabit a virtual reality built from concepts and ideas, except that as far as we know, we're not all plugged into a central computer. To put it bluntly, not only don't we experience the world directly, but the reality we live in is a massive collection of conceptual constructs that takes a unique form in each of our minds. Let's return to our experience of the breath. The conceptual experience just described is traditionally called the initial appearance of the meditation object. It's only slightly more refined than a non-meditator's perception of the breath. But for the first time, as we start pacifying the thinking, emotional mind, we can experience the breath purely as a sensory phenomenon, relatively free of conceptualizations, and move past the initial appearance. Your meditation object has finally become the sensations of the breath. You experience a repeated series of sensations arising and passing away, always within a clearly defined scope of attention. First, one sequence of sensations arises and passes away, followed by a brief interval of faint or no sensations. Then a second, different sequence arises and passes away, followed by another brief interval. Then the first series begins again, and on it goes. Since concepts no longer obscure the sensations, you can focus your full conscious power on them, observing with great clarity. This transformation in your experience of the meditation object is significant enough that tradition gives it a label, the acquired appearance of the meditation object, so-called because it is acquired through diligent practice. As we become better at single-pointedly observing the acquired appearance, increasingly subtle bits of conceptual processing become evident through their absence as they drop away. For example, at some point, you may suddenly realize you no longer know whether the sensations you're currently observing correspond to the in or the out breath. You also realize that you could know in an instant, but would have to intentionally shift attention away from the sensations to the conceptual formations of the mind. Other times, you may suddenly realize that the place where the sensations seem to occur no longer corresponds to where your nose is. The breath seems way off to the side, or above, or below where it should be. Normally, breath sensations and our overall awareness of the body are fused together in binding moments of consciousness. Now, breath and body are perceived separately, breath sensations in attention, and body shape and position in peripheral awareness. To recombine them, you would just need to momentarily shift your attention to the shape and position of your body. The result of experiences like these is profound insight into the relationships between attention and awareness, sensory experience and conceptual thinking, and the role of binding moments. Still, such insight can't happen unless you have completely overcome subtle dullness and cultivated mindfulness with powerful introspective awareness. By practicing experiencing the whole body with the breath, you pacify the mind, leading to the acquired appearance of the meditation object. Together, exclusive focus and non-conceptual perception give you the kind of direct experience of the mind that the models we discuss are based on. Cultivating metacognitive introspective awareness. Your first goal is to bring attention to a whole new level by subduing subtle distractions while maintaining introspective awareness. The second is to refine this awareness until it becomes metacognitive introspective awareness. We call it metacognitive because that implies a broader view from a higher perspective. It's like taking in a panorama from a hilltop versus being lower down and seeing only the few things immediately surrounding you. From this higher perspective, the object of consciousness is the mind itself. Specifically, metacognitive introspective awareness means being aware of the ongoing activities and current state of the mind. This is different from just being aware of mental objects, such as particular thoughts and memories, which are merely the contents of the mind. To illustrate, imagine that you're meditating, and a mental object appears in peripheral awareness. Maybe it's the thought that you need to change the water filter on the tap, or perhaps it's a memory of a compliment someone gave you. This is ordinary introspective awareness of mental objects as content. We merely let them be in peripheral awareness and let them go on their own. However, with metacognitive introspective awareness, you're simply aware that the activity of thinking is occurring, that a thought or memory has arisen, and you know the effect the thought or memory has on your state of mind. You notice, for example, that a memory is causing a pleasant state of mind, but you're not particularly concerned with what the memory is about, though if you wanted to know, you could. We can be metacognitively aware of two types of mental activity. First, we can be aware of what attention is doing. This includes where attention's being directed, the sensory category of the particular object, how attention moves, and its vividness and clarity. For example, you know you're primarily attending to a physical sensation, the breath at the nose. However, if there's a subtle distraction, you also know that attention is alternating. Second, you can be aware of moment-by-moment changes in the objects of peripheral awareness. You may be peripherally aware of a variety of different sensations in your body, but you also know that various sounds are moving in and out of awareness. Here's another example of the two types of activity. Let's say you're practicing experiencing the whole body with the breath. Your predefined scope of attention is therefore your whole body. However, you're aware that the sensations in the lower half of your body are currently not as vivid and clear as the upper half. But then you realize that sensations in your lower half are also becoming more distinct. This is metacognitive awareness of the first kind of activity involving attention. Then you notice a thought about this entire process emerging in peripheral awareness. This is metacognitive awareness of the second kind of activity, changes in objects of awareness. Once metacognitive awareness becomes finely attuned to these mental activities, your practice will become much more effective. The second aspect of metacognitive awareness is being cognizant of the state of your mind. This refers to its clarity and alertness, the predominant emotion, hedonic feelings, and the intentions driving your mental activity. In everyday terms, you're aware of being patient or annoyed, alert or dull, focused or distracted, obsessively focused or mindfully aware, equanimous or grasping, and so forth. During meditation, you want to remain continually aware of the perceptual clarity and overall alertness of the mind, taking corrective actions if you're dull or the sensations are indistinct. You want to know if your emotional state is joyful, annoyed, impatient, or bored, or whether or not it's changing. Does the moment-by-moment flow of hedonic feelings tend more toward the pleasant or the unpleasant? You also want to stay aware of how strong your intention is to feel all the sensations of the breath. If the intention gets weaker, reaffirm and strengthen it. You cultivate metacognitive introspective awareness by intending to objectively observe the activities and state of the mind. This means that you intend to know, moment by moment, the movements of attention, the quality of perception, and whether your scope is stable or expanding to include distractions. Are thoughts present in peripheral awareness, and if so, are they verbal or nonverbal? Is the mind restless, agitated, or relaxed? Is it joyful, or perhaps impatient? At the beginning of this stage, there will be a lot of variety in these states and activities, giving you many opportunities to cultivate metacognitive awareness. Metacognitive awareness and the narrating mind. According to the mind system model, metacognitive awareness results from the activities of the narrating mind. The narrating mind takes in, combines, and integrates information projected into consciousness by other sub-minds, then projects that back as a binding moment of consciousness. Each of these binding moments is a descriptive episode, providing an overview of our mental state and a summary of conscious activities during the brief interval that the episode covers. Binding moments that integrate the content of moments of introspective awareness constitute metacognitive awareness of the mind's ongoing state and activities. Cultivating metacognitive introspective awareness means increasing the proportion of these moments of metacognitive awareness scattered among other moments of attention and awareness. Holding a strong intention to be an objective observer of your own mind causes the narrating mind to increase its information-binding activity, thus producing more moments of metacognitive awareness. Consistently ignoring thoughts, introspective attention, and irrelevant sensations, extrospective attention, further increases the proportion of moments of consciousness available for metacognitive introspective awareness. Metacognitive attention. When the metacognitive binding moments of the narrating mind appear in awareness, the output is just information. That information doesn't undergo a lot of conceptual reinterpretation, and no separate, concrete self is inferred. However, the content of these binding moments can also be taken as objects of attention, and because attention always involves the discriminating mind, the result is quite different. The discriminating mind is where our concept of a self gets constructed. The discriminating mind takes the narrative structure and imputes a singular self, or I, who is in charge. That's why, when you have moments of attention, the ego self always makes an appearance. Despite the higher, more objective perspective of metacognitive introspective attention, the sense of being a self still arises. It feels like there is someone or something that is the witness to what is happening in the mind. Using meditative absorption to enhance your meditation skills. Meditative absorption is a powerful method that can greatly speed up your progress through the 10 stages. The whole body practice described later is particularly helpful for letting go of discursive thoughts, and we'll train your mind to enter a state of meditative absorption. We'll introduce other absorption practices in later stages. We're all familiar with what it's like to be absorbed in some activity. With the right conditions, this everyday kind of absorption can transform into the unique state called flow. In the words of the noted psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, flow is a state of concentration so focused that it amounts to complete absorption in an activity. Everyone experiences flow from time to time and will recognize its characteristics. People typically feel strong, alert, in effortless control, unselfconscious, and at the peak of their abilities. Both the sense of time and emotional problems seem to disappear, and there is an exhilarating feeling of transcendence. The seven conditions for achieving flow. According to Csikszentmihalyi, for an activity to potentially lead to a state of flow, it must meet the following conditions. 1. The activity is performed as an end in itself, not for any other purpose. 2. The goals of the activity are clear and the feedback you get from it is immediate. The most important thing about that feedback is the symbolic message it contains. I have succeeded in my goal. Intention is followed by action. The outcome gets a positive evaluation, and feelings of pleasure and satisfaction reinforce the continued repetition of intention and action. This process creates a sense of order in conscious experience. 3. The activity is neither taxingly difficult nor too easy. The challenge of the task is perfectly balanced with the person's abilities. 4. The activity requires complete focus of attention, allowing only a very select range of information into awareness, and leaving no room in the mind for anything else. All troubling or irrelevant thoughts are kept entirely at bay. Then, for that activity to actually transform into a flow state, these further conditions must arise. 5. The activity becomes spontaneous, almost automatic, and there is no sense of a self apart from the activity. 6. A feeling of effortlessness arises, even though continuous skilled performance is required. Everything happens seamlessly, as if by magic. 7. There is a sense of successfully exercising control, which is not the same as feeling like you are in control. Meditative absorptions are flow states that occur in meditation and are traditionally referred to as jhana. Tradition also defines the specific factors required for entering jhana. They are directed and sustained attention, vitaka vichara, exclusive focus and unification of the mind, chittas ekagra, ikodibhava, and joy and pleasure, piti sukha. If all these conditions are present, you will be in a state called access concentration, upacara samadhi. It's the state of concentration that immediately precedes and from which you're able to access jhana. Put more simply, the state of concentration that immediately precedes and provides access to jhana requires exclusive focus of attention, joy, and pleasure. Prior to stage 6, if you became too absorbed with the meditation object, you quickly sank into dullness or got lost in distraction. But having overcome subtle dullness and temporarily subdued subtle distractions, you can enter states of absorption without that happening. Also, the acquired appearance of the breath is a far more suitable object for entering meditative absorption than the initial appearance. The jhanas you can enter at this stage are very light, which means that some amount of thinking, investigation, and evaluation will intrude, making the jhana unstable. Still, they're extremely useful for deepening concentration and unifying the mind. They're also very enjoyable. As you become an adept meditator, the mind grows more unified, access concentration becomes more powerful, and the jhanas you can achieve will be correspondingly deeper. Before attempting jhana the first time, thoroughly familiarize yourself with the seven conditions for achieving flow. They're a useful guide for creating exactly the right conditions for flow to arise. Entering the whole body jhana. The whole body jhana is the first meditative absorption you will practice. Prepare for it by intentionally cultivating a state of joy. Begin by purposely noticing and holding in awareness any feelings of stillness, alertness, and pleasure. You may also encourage these feelings, or even try invoking them intentionally. As you proceed to deepen your practice and move toward exclusive attention, make sure to keep these pleasant qualities in your awareness throughout every sitting. In fact, you should always do this, whether you intend to practice jhana or not. Again, the meditation object for this jhana is all the breath-related sensations occurring simultaneously throughout the entire body. You may arrive at this point by first working through every body part during the practice of experiencing the whole body with the breath, or maybe you're able to shift immediately from the nose to the whole body. It doesn't matter. The main difference is that instead of returning to the breath at the nose, when trying for jhana, you stay with the breath sensations in the whole body as your meditation object. Some background noise may still get through, and discursive thoughts may arise from time to time. That also doesn't matter, as long as there are periods of stable, exclusive attention, during which the breath sensations in the entire body are extremely clear. These periods of stable, exclusive focus, combined with the metacognitive awareness of pleasure, will allow you to access jhana. Follow the sensations of the breath in the whole body as smoothly and seamlessly as possible. Each moment of doing your best is a success. Let all else fall away. Notice how pleasant the breath sensations are. They may take on a distinct vibrating quality. When everything is just right, your mind will seem to slip into a groove and begin to flow for a little while. The shift will be noticeable. You will recognize jhana as a distinct change in mental state. The same factors that defined access concentration are present in jhana as well. What distinguishes access concentration from jhana is this shift into a flow state characterized by conditions 5 through 7. Yes, your mind will slip out of that flow. When that happens, just catch the gold ring again and return to the jhana. After some practice, the very process of returning to jhana when you slip out becomes part of the whole flow experience. Eventually, the periods spent in the jhana become longer and more pleasant. This is the first whole-body jhana. Yet beware, there's still a possibility for dullness. Although it doesn't happen often in jhana, you're vulnerable if awareness fades. You may continue experiencing breath-related sensations, but they will seem a little vague, like they're somehow disconnected from your overall awareness of the body. When this happens, the focus of attention usually shifts away from the breath sensations toward the feelings of pleasure and happiness. In stage 7, you'll learn how to enter a deeper kind of jhana by actually focusing on joy and pleasure. But this is not the time. For now, if you ever find the focus of your attention shifting to pleasure, abandon the jhana and bring yourself to a state of full alertness immediately. Absorption without metacognitive awareness isn't really jhana, even if it's pleasant. If you accidentally train your mind to become dull in jhana, you'll have to unlearn that before you can use jhana to advance your practice. Practice this first jhana whenever conditions are right for access. Always notice exactly what's happening in the mind just before you enter jhana. You will thereby become more familiar with those conditions, and it will be easier to recreate them in the future. Develop skill at entering the jhana and remaining in it for longer and longer periods. It may take a while during any given session before you can reach jhana. Therefore, try to extend your meditation periods so you have enough time not only to enter jhana, but also to practice sustaining it. Jhana can be refined through 4 distinct phases, traditionally distinguished as the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th jhanas. If you can consistently enter and remain in this first whole-body jhana for up to 15 minutes without interruption, you can start practicing the 2nd jhana, also using the whole-body method. When you can easily do the same thing with that one, move on to the next. However, don't be in a rush. Build your skills. Until you have mastered stage 6, keep practicing these whole-body jhanas. Don't worry about whether or not you practice all 4 of them. While helpful and pleasurable, jhanas are not an end in themselves. For now, their only purpose is to help you master stage 6 and prepare you for faster progress through the next stages. There are much deeper jhanas yet to come. Conclusion. You have mastered stage 6 once you have subdued subtle distractions and can sustain a high level of metacognitive introspective awareness. Your mindfulness is quite strong, and you perceive the meditation object clearly and vividly. You also have complete control over your scope of attention, allowing you to examine any object with as broad or narrow a focus as you choose. When you sit, it takes a little while for attention to stabilize, but after that, subtle distractions are more or less completely absent. Thoughts may intrude once in a while, but are often absent even from peripheral awareness. Sensations and sounds continue in peripheral awareness, but only rarely become subtle distractions. When they do, they are quickly and automatically corrected for. Remember, you've only subdued subtle distractions. You haven't permanently eliminated them. Therefore, you must stay continually vigilant to keep subtle dullness and distractions from returning. You have reached the second milestone achievement, sustained exclusive focus of attention. This is quite an accomplishment. You have now completed the development of skilled concentration. In stage 7, you will make the transition to the practice of an adept. The most rewarding and joyous aspects of meditation await you.